Well, hi. Often imitated, but never duplicated. I want to say thanks to Jonathan. Appreciate the playing. There he is. Always enjoys playing. Very nice songs that he creates there. Definitely has a gift for that. Before I get started, which I will look at the time, need to buzz through my message today. Got a little late start. Mr. Luger just gave me an extra hour. I'm just kidding. I don't know that much. before we get started, just wanted to mention that we have actually started up some Bible studies in our house on Wednesday evenings. I kind of hesitated to make an announcement because we had quite a number of people that come to them. But I think it's going to fluctuate, you know, depending on what's going on at each week. So, you know, sometimes we have a lot, sometimes we have less. But we're doing it every other Wednesday night. So the next one is this coming Wednesday. And the basic way that we do it is I have a lesson that a handout ahead of time that we go away and study, and then we come back that night and have an interactive discussion on a certain topic. And so far it's proved to be very good and profitable. So the next one is this Wednesday, and we did it every other Wednesday so we can alternate with Les King and his Bible studies that he's having, because Les attends here and then also has a Bible study at his place on the alternate times. So if you want to come, you're welcome. Just a caveat, our house is not huge. You may end up sitting on the floor, you know, if we get a lot of people, which is fine. But the way we do it is we have a potluck at 6, and then we have a Bible study at 7. So feel free to come. Bible study lasts about an hour, hour and 15 minutes. And this Wednesday, in fact, we are discussing godly wisdom this Wednesday. So this is our fourth one. We've discussed the church eras, or specifically Laodicea. We've discussed the weightier matters of the law. We've discussed quite a few different topics. It's been very interesting discussions that we've been having. All right, on to my sermon. All right, this morning, what I'd like to talk about today is, if you turn back to Revelation 2:16 or 2:12, start turning back to Revelation 2:12, there's an interesting scripture that's pointed out there. And if you're looking for a title of the sermon today, I want to talk about the doctrine of Balaam today, as well as a subtext of the concept of spiritual poisoning, because you'll see, hopefully by the end, what I'm talking about, how those two are related, what the doctrine of Balaam is. So let's start out with Revelation 2 and verse 12 to understand what God is saying here. It says in verse 12, "And to the angel of the church of Pergamos write," and God does say, you know, what he says to all the churches, be sure to hear. And so this is something that equally applies to us. If it applies, then you hear it. If it doesn't, then obviously it doesn't apply. But I would suggest that we look at all of the church eras and see if they apply. Because if you ignore one, then you're going to suffer the actual consequences. So when we read Pergamos and say, well, I'm not Pergamos, that's not the right thing to say. The thing to say is, you know, if this applies to me, then I'm going to end up with the same result. So the angel of the church of Pergamos, right, it says down in verse 14, "But I have a few things against you, because you have there those who hold the doctrine of Balaam, who taught Balak to put a stumbling block before the children of Israel, to eat things sacrificed to idols and to commit sexual immorality. Thus you also have those who hold the doctrine of the Nicolaitans, which things I hate. Repent, or else I will come to you quickly and will fight against them in the sword of my mouth." Now, who was this Balaam character? I think we know in the Bible that Balaam was, or we probably are familiar with the story. I'll recap it a little bit and expand on certain parts, but one of the things that Balaam was, and it's maybe it's kind of confusing, but Balaam was actually a sorcerer. We find this back, you know, if we turn back, there's a scripture that says, "Now when Balaam saw that it pleased the Lord to bless Israel," this is in Numbers 24, "when it saw to please the bless Israel, he did not go as at other times to seek to use sorcery." So what it's saying is that what he had been doing and what he does for his life is he is actually a sorcerer. Sometimes we confuse that maybe this is a prophet of God, but this was a person who used sorcery, who told prophecies and was renowned for, quote-unquote, them coming true. That does not mean that that is a power from God. That means that that is a power of sorcery that he had, that, you know, maybe some of that was real. But it said he did not go to seek to use sorcery. And then verse 2 says, "And Balaam raised his eyes and saw Israel encamped according to their tribes, and the Spirit of God came upon him." Now, what does that mean? That you know, if he's a sorcerer, how is he the Spirit of God there? And there's this important distinction to make. When a Spirit of God comes upon a person, upon them, the phrasing there is not that they have the Spirit of God, but it is something that's done against their will in this case. So this is, does not mean that he had God's Spirit or God's Spirit was leading him. It's saying that he was trying to do something. God's Spirit came upon him and made him do something else. And you can read that in the account of the example, because I won't rehash all that, but he came and said, like, I'm going to try, or he wanted him to curse Israel. Balak wanted to have him come and curse Israel to name a curse. He went to go give a curse, and what happened is God's Spirit came upon him instead. He made him say a blessing every single time. It's kind of comical in some ways, because he's coming to curse him. Every time he started to curse him, out came this huge blessing that God, you know, worked through his mouth. And that's exactly what it means. When the Spirit came upon him, it was against his will. But God said, this is what is going to happen in this case. I'm not going to let you curse him. So what we find is, first of all, Balaam was a sorcerer. He was not a prophet of God, a sorcerer, that God, when he tried to curse him, forced him to actually bless him. And we see that also reiterated later if you turn to Joshua 24, verse 9. Joshua 24, verse 9 also says this. Talking about the same incident, it says, "Then Balak the son of Zippor, king of Moab, arose to make war against Israel, and sent and called Balaam the son of Beor to curse you. But I would not listen to Balaam." This is God talking. "Therefore he continued to bless you, so I delivered you out of his hand." So God is saying that this person came to bless you, Israel, and I protected you. So exactly what it's saying there, is that God is the one here who made his Spirit come upon Balaam and made him come and actually bless them. Now, that's kind of who Balaam was. We can understand kind of the story or the history we probably remember of Balaam, but what is this talking about in Revelation that we read? In Revelation, it says the doctrine of Balaam. What is a doctrine? You know, first of all, it says it's a doctrine of how to put a stumbling block in front of Israel. Now, when you say doctrine, you can carry a doctrine, because what a doctrine is basically a teaching, right? If you have a doctrine or church body has a doctrine, it's a teaching that they believe. Balaam had a teaching, and he taught people this thing. In fact, it says he went to Balak the king and said, "Let me teach you something." That's a doctrine. I'm going to teach you how to do something, right? So when it says he had a doctrine, it means that he had a teaching that he understood, he knew how it worked, and he went and showed people how to do the same things. So he was well-versed in this thing, and what it basically is, as it says here, is to put a stumbling block in front of Israel. He was well-versed in the art of making other people stumble. He was well-versed in that. He understood. He had a doctrine and a teaching that he had honed over the years to make people stumble. Now, what was that? It says there, it's a couple of things. He taught Balak a couple of things. The first one, if you look at what Balaam, if you kind of understand this doctrine that he have, and if you take the meaning of his name could be translated to conquer people. So in other words, this man, and even the meaning of his name, means that he has a doctrine, idea of how to go and conquer people. Now, let me throw something out to you. Where do most people get conquered from? A group. Is it from the outside? Right? If you look at groups, traditionally when they get attacked from the outside, tend to band together, tend to unite together, tend to be strong, right? And so him as a conqueror over the people is not like that. He wasn't somebody who was a general who had an army and came conquered people. But the way people get dismantled or conquered usually is from within, right? And that is the skill that this person was good at. That is the teaching that he had, was dismantling people from the inside, bringing them down. And what I'm going to talk about is actually poisoning people, spiritually poisoning people. Now, there's a couple of things that it mentions. Right? There's also the phrase Nicolaitans, and the Nicolaitans were a group. They're not really well known, but it is known about them that they espouse the idea of, you know, licentiousness, right? Being sexually free or being able to sin. And they are people who also are equated with Balaam because they held on to the same doctrine, right? And let me describe you what the doctrine of Balaam is really those two things right there, is to commit sexual immorality is the first part of it, and eat things sacrificed to idols. You know, we say, oh, well, you know, whatever. It doesn't apply to me. Let's look at this, because it's very interesting to understand. There's a process here, and I'll explain the doctrine of Balaam, how it poisons, but it applies equally to other things, But I think you'll see that this is actually a very dangerous thing right here. And on the surface, it's like, well, nobody's convincing me of this. Well, let's dig deeper to understand how you actually get poisoned into all this. These at first don't look related. Commit sexual immorality and eat things sacrificed to idols don't look related. But you know what? They are 100% completely related, these two. Now, what does it mean to eat things sacrificed to idols? Usually what that really is talking about is, you know, it involves, it's part of a process of worshiping other gods. It's a part of a process of eating things that that was a ritual that was done by other religions when they worshiped other gods. So by doing these two things, actually by doing the first thing, committing sexual immorality, they got them to do the second thing. Let me put it that way. So the doctrine of Balaam was to introduce the idea of how to poison a group of people to commit sexual immorality so that would lead them to worshiping another god. So when God says you hold the doctrine of Balaam, it means that they were holding on to the idea, at least the start of it even, which is to say that, you know, sexual immorality is okay, or there's parts of it that are okay, or it's all right if I'm kind of dabbling in it or not. There's all shades of whatever you want to think of it as that could be in your mind, could be, is part of that doctrine. Now, those two things are related, and we'll kind of see how this works as we go. Now, what Balaam did with this doctrine is he poisoned a group of people. He poisoned Israel. And a poison basically is just a substance that through the chemical action kills or injures or impairs an organism. It could be people, a person, could be a group of people, but it's just a substance that poisons and ends up killing something. Now, we're familiar also, I have the pictures of the donkey up there because we're familiar with the, you know, story in the Old Testament where he went to go curse them and he was on the donkey and the donkey, you know, spoke to him. Basically, God was speaking to him saying, I am not pleased with your perversion, the way that you do these type of things. Now, when we look at this doctrine and we see, as I said, poison is something that usually kills, you'll see that the word is also, if you kind of study into the word for poison, it's rendered a number of different ways, right? The word gall in the Bible is used to be kind of a poisonous substance, wormwood, the word hemlock, the word poison. You'll see these kind of discussed in different ways in different scriptures in the Bible, and they refer to this concept of poisoning, right? When you drink of gall, you're drinking of a poisonous substance. You're poisoning yourself. So when you see that in the Bible, that's also what it's referring to. So, for example, if you turn to Deuteronomy 29:14, there's an example of that there. Deuteronomy 29, actually we'll start in verse 16. It says, for you know that we dwelt in the land of Egypt, and that we came through the nations which you passed by, and when you saw their abominations and their idols, which were among them, wood and stone and silver and gold, so that there may not be among you man or woman or family or tribe whose heart turns away from the Lord our God to go and serve those gods of these nations, and that there may not be among you a root bearing bitterness or wormwood. Right? And so it may not happen that when he hears these words, you know, he says things, right? And so what the phrase there where it says a root-bearing bitterness or wormwood is the same concept of poison. It's saying that I have this pact with you, and I want you to not look at these things that they have, idols, these other things that they do, so that what creeps up in you ends up being poisonous. Now, if you start to think about that on a lot of different levels, and a lot of times, you know, this is a good season to talk about this, because sometimes I think when it comes to certain occasions or things that other religions have introduced, maybe they don't know better, which is fine, but if you know better and your mindset is to try to get as close as you can to that thing without really, you know, necessarily stepping over the line, what it's doing is it's saying here that you're opening up a place where a root of poison can be introduced inside of you. So when God says, I don't want you to have anything to do with those things, he says it for a reason, because you are not going to be different than the rest of history, where 9 people out of 10 do that and mix it and end up being bitter and actually turn their hearts away from God. It's written over and over in the Bible. It's written over and over in the New Testament. It's written over and over in the history of the church that you don't mix those two things together and come out okay. It's a poison that's there. Now, how did Balaam take this concept and poison the people? Let's look at Numbers 25. Is just a quick summary of the incident that happened there. And, you know, the Bible speaks of it very briefly. And what I'd like to do is fill in some of the things that are behind this, because I think it's very telling. We can understand how it poisons people. Numbers 25, verse 1 through 3, and then we'll do 5 through 8 as well. It says, "Now Israel remained at the Acacia Grove, and the people began to commit harlotry with the women of Moab." This actually, it doesn't tell you exactly right here, but this, what it's saying is that Balaam actually introduced this concept to the people. He introduced the women of Moab to Israel. He taught Balak, and I'll show you what this is a little bit later, to say, look, if you want to destroy this people, let me tell you how to do it. And start with these women and start with this sex. And then it said, the next step is they invited the people to sacrifice of their gods. And the people ate and bowed down to their gods. So they ate meat sacrificed to idols and bowed down to their gods. Right? So they started with a sexual immorality, and then they started worshiping their gods. So Israel was joined to Baal Peor, and the anger of the Lord was aroused against Israel. So dropping down to verse 5, Moses said to the judges of Israel, every one of you kill his men who were joined to Baal of Peor. And then going down to verse 6, it says, indeed, one of the children of Israel came and presented to his brethren a Midianite woman in the sight of Moses and in the sight of all the congregation of the children of Israel. Now, it sounds innocent. Well, you know, presented a woman, but I'll show you what this actually meant, is that this person was fully poisoned and came in defiance and said, you know what, I'm doing this anyway, in front of Moses, the leadership, and in front of the people of Israel, said, I don't really care. I'm doing this in front of you. Right? So that's when it says that they presented a woman in the sight of them, that's what it means. It's in the face of. Right? And so now verse 7 says, now when Phinehas, the son of Eleazar, the son of Aaron the priest, saw it, he rose from among the congregation and took a javelin in his hand. And he went after the man of Israel into the tent and thrust both of them through, the man of Israel and the woman through her body. So the plague was stopped among the children of Israel. This was not before 24,000 people died from this incident. There was a very, very serious poison that had happened that had infected, and it was the doctrine of Balaam that Balaam gave to Balak and Balak executed on, poisoned the people of Israel, that led to this very incident that you see right here. We also see somebody, Phinehas, stopping the poison, stopping this in the sight of God. So how does this work? How is it that adultery and going off to other gods are related, or sexual immorality? There's a Proverbs 6:32 that for years I've read, and didn't quite get the full meaning of it. But when you look at this, Proverbs 6:32 says something very interesting. It says, whoever commits adultery with a woman lacks understanding. He who does so destroys his own soul. His own soul. Now, this is not talking about venereal disease. This is not talking about just living with a scar or a consequence. This isn't just talking about becoming a soulless person, like you're running around just having sex. This is actually is spiritual phraseology. When you destroy your own soul, that is a spiritual component of your body. It's not just a physical thing or an emotional thing. That's a spiritual component we're talking about. This is really, on a spiritual level, saying he who commits adultery with a woman is destroying his soul spiritually. There is a direct relationship that's defined by this proverb right here that says that one is the other. Balaam said, Balak, I can get these people to worship other gods. Start with sex. Start with these women. And over time, they will turn to worshiping the gods. This scripture says the very same thing. You start with sex, you destroy your own soul spiritually. So it is not... It is a very spiritual matter this is talking about. This is on a spiritual context that is referring when it says destroy your own soul. Direct relationship. So, how does this specifically work? What I want to do is actually read you a very long passage out of the book called Josephus. Josephus is a historian, and he has an account of Moses and Balaam and this whole incident that took place here, and he kind of backfills some of it. Right, there's kind of some more of the story that's expanded out. Now, as you listen to the story, it's going to be a long passage, but think about a couple of things. Think about the people that were doing this, how it started, and a poisoned attitude. And what does a poisoned attitude sound like? And let me ask you this, have you heard it before? Have you heard a poisoned attitude before? So let's kind of step through this. This is actually from chapter 6 of Josephus, and the title heading of the article is Concerning Balaam the Prophet and What Kind of Man He Was. It says, But Balak, being very angry that the Israelites were not cursed, sent away Balaam without thinking him worthy of any honor. Whereupon, when he was just upon his journey in order to pass the Euphrates, he sent for Balak and for the princes of the Midianites. And he spake to them thus, O Balak and you Midianites that are here present, for I am obliged even without the will of God to gratify you. It is true no entire destruction can seize upon the nation of the Hebrews, neither by war, nor by plague, nor by scarcity of fruits of the earth, nor can any other unexpected accident be their entire ruin. For the providence of God is concerning to preserve them from such a misfortune. For God won't permit such a big calamity. He's saying there's no army, no big thing that's going to destroy these people. God's not going to permit that. So it says, he goes on to say, so if you have a mind to gain a victory over them for a short space of time, you will obtain it by the following my directions. Here's his teaching. Here's his doctrine. Do you therefore set out the handsomeness of such of your daughters as are the most eminent for beauty and are proper to force and conquer the modesty of those that behold them. And these decked and trimmed to the highest degree you are able, right? Get the prettiest women, dress them up the best. And then do you send them to the near the Israelites' camp and give them in charge that when the young men of Hebrews desire their company, they allow it to them. And when they see that they are enamored of them, let them take their leave. And if they entreat them to stay, let them not give their consent till they have persuaded them to leave off their obedience to their own laws and worship of that God who established them and to worship the gods of the Midianites and the Moabites. For by this means God will be angry at them. Accordingly, when Balaam had suggested this counsel to them, he went away. There's Balaam's doctrine, right there. Take the prettiest women, dress them up, let them go seduce them, and at some point down the road, when the hook, line, and sinker is there, we'll make them start to worship the other gods. So when the Midianites had sent their daughters, as Balaam had exhorted them, the Hebrew young men were allured by their beauty, and they came to discourse with them and besought them not to grudge them the enjoyment of their beauty, nor to deny them their conversation. These daughters of the Midianites received their words gladly and consented to it and stayed with them. But when they had brought them to be enamored of them and their inclinations of them were grown to ripeness, they began to think of departing from them. Then it was that these men became greatly disconsolate at the women's departure, and they were urgent with them not to leave them, but begged that they would continue there and become their wives. And they promised them that they should be owned as mistresses of all the land. And then they said this with an oath and called God for the arbiter of what they promised. And with their tears in their eyes and all their such marks of concern as might show how miserable they thought themselves without them, and so might move their compassion for them. So the women, as soon as they perceived that they had made them their slaves, did you get that? And had caught them with their conversation, then they began to speak like this. Oh, you illustrious young men. Oh, you big studs. Right? I'll just paraphrase Josephus. It's true. That's all they're saying. Batting the eyelashes. They got them. We have houses of our own at home and great plenty of good things there, together with the natural affection and love of our parents and friends, nor is out of our want of any such things that we come to discourse with you. Nor did we admit of your invitation with the design to prostitute the beauty of our bodies for gain, but taking you for brave and worthy men, re-agree to your request that we might treat you with such honors as hospitality required. And now seeing you say that you have a great affection for us and are troubled when you think we are departing, we are not adverse to your entreaties. And if we may receive such assurance as your goodwill, as we think we can alone sufficient, we will be glad to lead our lives with you as our wives. But we are afraid that you will in time be weary of our company, and you will then abuse us and send us back to our parents after an ignominious manner. And so they desired that they would excuse them in their guarding against the danger. But the young men professed that they would give them any assurance that they should desire, nor did they at all contradict what they had requested. So great was the passion they had for them. If then, he said, this be your resolution, since you make use of such customs and conduct of life as are entirely different from all the other men, inasmuch that your kind of food are peculiar to yourselves, and the kind of drink not common to others, it will be absolutely necessary, if you would have us for your wives, that you do withal worship our gods. Nor can there be any other demonstration of the kindness with which you say you already have and promise to have hereafter to us than this, that you worship the same gods as we do. For has anyone reason to complain that you now are come into this country? You should worship the proper gods of the same country. When you're in Rome, do as the Romans do. Especially while our gods are common to all men, and yours such as belong to nobody else but yourselves. You're the only ones who've got that one. So they said that they must either come into such methods of divine worship as all others came into, or else they must look out for another world where they may live by themselves according to their own laws. So it says, now the young men were induced by the fondness that they had for these women, and they spoke very well. They were very eloquent. So they gave themselves up to what they had persuaded them, and they transgressed their own laws. And supposing that there were many gods and resolving that they would sacrifice to them according to the law. So they gave it up. They, over time, with these young women and their company, gave it up. Now here's the account that we read before. Even Zimri, the head of the tribe of Simeon, accompanied with Cozbi, a Midianite woman, a man of authority in that country, had been desired by his wife to disregard the laws of Moses and to follow those she was used to. He complied with her, and the both by sacrificing after a manner from his own and by taking a stranger to his wife. So Zimri rose up after him, right? So he brought, this is the actual guy who brought that woman in that we read in the Bible. Zimri rose up after Moses and said, yes, indeed, Moses, you are at liberty to make use of such laws as you're fond of and has, by your accustoming yourself to them, made them firm. You have a firm hand. Otherwise, if things had not been thus, you had often been punished before now and had known that the Hebrews are not easily put upon. But you shall not have me, one of thy followers, in your tyrannical commands. You're a tyrant. For you do nothing else hitherto but under pretense of laws and of God. He's saying everything you're doing right now is under the pretense that it's God's law and God told you to do this. You're wickedly opposing upon us slavery and gain dominion to yourself while you deprive us of the sweetness of life. Right? You start to see what has changed in this person's mind. All of a sudden, the same laws that they obeyed before that Moses preached and told them, he's saying, you know what? You're using that just because you want to reign over us, be a tyrant. You know, and you're denying us something. Nay, indeed, this man is harder upon the Hebrews than were the Egyptians. Moses is harder than the Egyptians, and pretending to punish according to his laws, everyone's acting what is most agreeable to himself. But you thyself better deserve to suffer punishment, who presumes to abolish what everyone acknowledges to be what is good for him, and aims to make the single opinion to have more force than all the rest of us. You're trying to make your one opinion count more than what all these people out here think. Right? So, and what I do now I think to be right. I shall not hereafter deny to be according to my own sentiments. I have married, and as you say rightly, a strange woman, and you hear what I do for myself as from one that is free. For truly I did not intend to conceal myself. Like he's saying, I'm doing it openly. I also own that I sacrifice to those gods to whom you do not think it fit to sacrifice, and I think it right to come at truth by inquiring of many people. There's where his mind ended up. I think it's right to come at truth by asking a whole bunch of different people. Does that not ring true today? Do you not hear the same kind of phrasing? And not like one that lives under tyranny, to suffer the whole hope of my life to depend upon one man. Nor shall anyone find cause to rejoice who declares himself to have more authority over my actions than myself. I will not submit myself to any man. I am going to do what I know I'm going to do. Right? Now, when Zimri had said these things about he and some others wickedly had done, the people held their peace because they feared what might come upon them, because they saw their legislator was not willing to bring his insolence before the public any further to not openly contend with that. So what happened, as we see, is Phinehas said no. This open show of rebellion and this poison has gone through this entire group of people. And what you see Phinehas do was in response to that person's speech right there. When it says he came before the people, he came before Moses and all the people, and he gave this speech to them and said, nobody's going to tell me what to do. Your laws are for you to be a tyrant. It's to your benefit, not to mine. I'm going to let this group decide. I think we just have as big enough as brains as you do. All this kind of talk, right? That is a mind fully poisoned. That is where it ends up. That is the poisoning process that takes place. And just to finish with one of these phrases down here, it said, because although Balaam, who was sent for by the Midianites to curse the Hebrews, and when he was hindered from doing it by divine providence, did still suggest that advice to them by making use of which our enemies had well-nigh corrupted the whole multitude of the Hebrews with their wiles, till some of them were deeply infected with their opinions. That is the result, and this is what Josephus says. So, if we go back to the scripture that we just read in Proverbs, whoever commits adultery with a woman lacks understanding. He who does so destroys his own soul. Did you not see in that example of the process that took place, start to finish, and where that man ended up in the kind of phrases that they were saying? Your very outlook and your mind changes when you start down this path. It becomes altered. You know, it's the idea of wanting to be free and unencumbered. You start to say the same things and look at things like Zimri did. Who are you to be over me? I'm not going to have you tell me what to do. I can follow what I know to do best. We're doing things by consensus, you know, et cetera, et cetera. The language that you speak starts to become that, whether you know it or not. That is the poisoning process. The doctrine of Balaam is how to do that, how to dismantle and poison a people with that doctrine. It's exactly what it's about. 2 Peter 2, verse 12. Was this an issue thousands of years later after Balaam in the New Testament church? What does Peter say? 2 Peter 2:12. It says, but these, like natural brute beasts made to be caught and destroyed, speak evil of the things that they do not understand and will utterly perish in their own corruption and will receive the wages of unrighteousness as those who count it pleasure to carouse in the daytime, their spots and blemishes, carousing in their own deceptions while they feast with you. having eyes full of adultery and that cannot cease from sin, enticing unstable souls, they have a heart trained in covetous practice and are accursed children. They have forsaken the right way and gone astray, following the way of Balaam, the son of Beor, who loved the wages of unrighteousness. This was an issue in the New Testament church as well. People came in preaching the same thing, covetous practices, and they taught adultery, and they could not cease from it. It was all about the same messages again of sin, of adultery. Is the doctrine of Balaam alive today? Let me ask you that. Is it alive today? Is there not sex every single place you look today for a reason? In fact, even today, it's not even considered, you know, normal to be a virgin. It's considered normal to have sex, you know, on your first few dates. It's gone such the opposite direction. I'm not saying it's just today because, you know, we were young. It's the same thing. The same things go round and round and round down through the ages. But advertising puts us out to us. It entices us to do it. It makes it think that it's okay. And what I'm saying to you is that is the start of the doctrine of Balaam that will poison you. It is not okay. Pornography on the internet is a huge addiction. Is that okay? Oh, I'm slipping up every once in a while. Is that okay? What I'm telling you that none of these things, this idea is not okay. Let me ask you a question. Can you ingest a little poison? Is it safe to ingest a little poison? There's a story of a woman who killed her husband, trying to do it undetected. The way she did it was she just fed him a little bit of poison every single day. And over time, he ended up kind of dying, and it almost looked natural. Fortunately, they were to trace it. Now, that is not to give ladies any ideas in the congregation. Just want you to use that piece of information responsibly. You look nice today, dear. No, I'm just kidding. But let me ask you the question again. Can you ingest a little poison? Is it possible to ingest a little? Can I just ingest a little sexual immorality here or there? Can I harbor some of it? You know, after all, it's the way guys are built. That's the way we're made. Have you heard that? Have you said that? What I'm telling you is what you're holding on to is a piece of poison that will kill you. It will kill you. Can you ingest poison and live? What does the Bible say about that? A little leaven leavens the whole lump. If your eye is bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. Therefore, the light that is in you, how great is that darkness? Does a spring send forth fresh water and bitter water from the same opening? Cannot. Cannot do that. Can a fig tree bear olives or grapevines bear figs? Cannot. Do you know that friendship with the world is enmity with God? Can you take fire in your bosom and not be burned? How many phrases in the Bible say the same concept? It is saying that if you think that you're going to hold on to poison, you are sadly mistaken. The problem is human beings think they can. Everybody is an exception to that rule. When you sit back and you say, you know what, yeah, but I've been through a lot, I'm calloused, I can handle it. Let me tell you something, that is not true. Okay? The heart will deceive itself. It's desperately wicked. So can you take poison into your body? Can you continually listen to rumors and accusations, people poisoning with the tongue? Have that not affect you over time? You cannot. You cannot listen to all these things. Well, I read my Bible. I study the Word, and I counteract it. Think about it this way. Can you, if you ingest a little bit of poison every day, eat a really healthy diet and herbs and stay alive? You cannot. If you ingest poison and eat the best diet, you will die. You will die. It's the same thing. People say, I'm studying my Bible. Can you ingest poison and study your Bible? You will die. It will poison you. It will absolutely poison you. Am I clear enough on that? If I'm not, I can keep going on that part. Trust me. You know, and if you decide that you're just going to hang on and listen to this stuff or keep ingesting it little by little, you are kidding yourself. Right? If you listen to what the devil says, you'll begin to doubt what God says. It is impossible to handle a little bit of poison. You cannot do that. Balaam knew this, and he taught Balak exactly how to do that. Let me tell you, since God has protected them, will not allow any disaster to come upon them, let me tell you how to destroy them from the inside. Let them destroy themselves. And you know what? He did that really, really well. Now, if you look at this poison, there's a progression here or a process that happens. When you start out, you take some poison into your body. You know, poison could be a number of things. Like I said, it could be this sin. It could, entertaining sin is okay. Somebody criticizing somebody else, a false idea. What happens from that when you get this is you start to have a little bit of doubt and suspicion. Oh, well, you know, that makes me stop and think. Since I'm an enlightened Christian, I can stop and think now. And I'm thinking about that. And what happens is you start to doubt, have a few suspicions. Oh, maybe there's something going on here. Maybe there is a tyranny thing going on here, and I'm just going to be the one on the outside. You start to go through all these types of things. What happens after that is you start to lose your trust, your faith in God, the organization, the people you're around, whatever. It doesn't matter. When you're poisoned, you start to lose that. What happens at some point is disobedience starts to take place. Those people don't have my best interest at heart. They don't care about me. I am out of here. Or I am this, or I am that. That doesn't happen all at once. There's a progression here, and you saw that with Zimri and these people. There's a progression that happened where that person ended up disobeying. Now, one of the next steps that comes is, after enough of that, you just start to feed on hate, bitterness. It just becomes a place where you're kind of stuck in, self-fulfilling. Those people don't like me, and they kicked me out, or this happened, or whatever. You get further and further down. At some point, if you do that long enough, you're going to end up at a state of indifference. You just don't care. You don't care. Yeah, whatever. I've gotten burned so many times, I could care less. You know, I am completely past bitterness, and I am now completely indifferent. It does not make one bit of difference to me. Next step after that is you await eternal death. So next step, there's nothing else. Unless you reverse this process, that's where you end up. That is the poison process. If you can see that, that happens. That is the progression that you end up going down, and that is what Satan does to dismantle people. Why does God say he hates the doctrine of Balaam? I hope you understand a little bit better that that's exactly why he says he hates it, because it poisons people and destroys a people. You can see this pattern over and over again in the Bible. Look at it. What did Adam and Eve, where did they start? A little bit of criticism at the top. They started to doubt, right? They lost their faith, right? There was a disobedience that happened. You know, and they probably lived in a state of hate and bitterness after a while because their son Cain ended up killing Abel, right? There's a lot of anger and stuff that's going around that family. And, even indifference with it. You know, Cain was so past the point that he didn't care. He could care less. You know, it's the same thing with Cain, like I said. What about the spies that was mentioned in the sermonette today? The spies that came back. The same process happened. A little bit of poison came in. Hey, you know, this is not true, or this is a criticism or a false idea. People had doubt and suspicion. They lost their trust and faith. They disobeyed. They became angry, you know, et cetera. You can see the path that this goes down. So when God says he hates the doctrine of Balaam, he hates this because this is exactly what its intent is to do. And like I said, you cannot ingest poison without it affecting you. Turn to Proverbs 6:23. Just have a few more scriptures, and I should be done in 7 minutes or so for the clock watchers out there. Proverbs 6:23-28. God's commandment is a lamp, and the law is a light. Reproofs of instruction are the way of life to keep you from the evil woman, from the flattering tongue of the seductress. A lot of times we read that literally. Does it mean literally? Absolutely. Like I said before, committing a sexual sin is against your own soul, spirituality, spiritually. But this is also talking about all forms of what Satan throws at us, false ideas as well. Do not lust after her beauty in your heart. Do not let her allure you with her eyelids, for by means of a harlot a man is reduced to a crust of bread. I love that symbology. Once you're a man, now you're just a piece of bread, you know, a corner of a bread, not even the good part, right? And an adulteress will prey upon his precious life. Can man take fire into his bosom and not be burned? Can one walk on hot coals and his feet not be seared? Is it possible? Now, don't go quoting Tony Robbins' firewalking seminars or anything like that to me. What it's saying is if you take a fire into your bosom or your chest, you will burn yourself. It will happen. Why do we think it won't happen? Now, let me present a picture up here for you of something. Because how many of you heard about in Ukraine, Viktor Yushchenko, right, the opposition leader? So they're having elections, and he's the opposition leader. Well, he claimed he was poisoned, and they just confirmed this morning with a press release or a press with the press that indeed they tested it, and he was poisoned. Now, he wasn't poisoned enough to die, but what happened? Do you know what happened to him? Look at his face. That is a result of the poison that's in his body that didn't kill him. He was known as a kind of charismatic, good-looking person. Now he's got a face that's completely just swollen up and stuff, and they don't know if that will ever go away. They don't know if that can go away. Right? Why do I put this up? You can probably guess why, but when you allow poison in, spiritually, this is what you look like. Okay, think of it that way. Remember this picture. When you see this in the news, think of it with spiritual poisoning. You don't ingest poisoning like this without it doing something to you. Spiritually, if you could see your face, you look like this when you ingest the poison in. You're scarred, it's disfigured, and it is hideous looking. Right? A lot of times we want to think we're over there still, but we're over here. When we're allowing poison into our hearts to dwell on it, or to kind of harbor it, or to keep it there. Now think of it too, who's the author of this poison? Satan. What did he start out as? The most beautiful being that you could ever imagine. What is he described as today? A dragon. One of the most hideous things you could ever probably see. A big dragon. That is a clear example of what bitter poison does to a person. There's a start. Satan is the finish. Why does God say he hates that? Because he is not going to allow that. He's not going to allow what happened to Satan again. God tells us this for a reason, because he sees already what happened. He knows what happens when somebody's poisoned. He's not going to allow that opportunity to happen. Today, we have to grapple with being poisoned and putting out poison and not harboring it in our minds and hearts now. God wants to see that, so that he can give us eternal life, because he does not want the same thing to happen again. He will not allow the same thing to happen again. How do you cleanse yourself? How do you cleanse yourself? How do you reverse the process? If you look like this, how do you reverse the process? A couple of scriptures in closing. 1 Peter 1:22 says, since you have purified your souls by obeying. Now, there's a process that can be reversed. But you have to do something. I didn't say you earn salvation by works. Do not mishear that. I said that if you are harboring poison and you're scarred by poison, to reverse that process, God says you can purify it. The very same soul where it says that if you commit adultery, that you sin against your own soul, it becomes poisoned, you can purify that soul by obeying the truth. In sincere love of the brethren, love one another with a pure heart, not a mixed, poisoned heart. Well, other people are mad and they are sinners and I have to defend myself. Forget that. You love God, you love your brethren out of a pure heart, even if somebody does something. You obey. You purify your soul. Now, you can reverse it. And again, it gets back to your soul or your heart. But you have to commit to obey. It says it's very clearly. There's no middle road here. There's no double-mindedness. There's no way I can try and hold on to both. It says in James, cleanse your hands, you sinners. Purify your hearts, you double-minded. You have to purify your heart. What I'm asking you today is, one, realize you cannot ingest even a little poison. You're kidding yourself. You will die. It will affect you at some point. And two, let's look in our hearts and cleanse them. How do you cleanse it? There's a number of scriptures that say it. This one says it directly. How can a young man cleanse his way? How do you clean up the poison? By taking heed according to your word. With my whole heart have I sought you. Oh, let me not wander from your commandments. Your word have I hidden in my heart that I might not sin against you. You know, what it's talking about here is looking at your heart and purifying your heart. David in Psalm 51 said, create in me a clean heart, renew a right spirit. He realized he was accepting poison. There's a whole other example of the exact same thing. God is light. Inside of him is no darkness. There is no poisonous that's being harbored by God. If you want to become God, that's the same thing. The same thing. So look deep inside of your heart. And if you can, with your whole heart, seek God and seek to obey, a supernatural law there will purify and cleanse your heart out. It will. Now, I didn't just say, okay, all right, obey commandments, I'm keeping the Sabbath. With your whole heart, you seek God, and it will purify your heart. You hide his commandment in your heart, and it will cleanse you. There is a difference here, a choice you have to make. You have to decide and understand poison will kill you, and you have to decide, I don't want it, and you obey, and supernaturally, God will cleanse your heart out for you. It will happen. We have to make choices in our Christian life. This is one of them. Do not let poison. If you're hearing it, block it off. It's not a matter of being sophisticated. I need to make the right decision. I need to hear all sides. Do not listen to poison. I didn't say be ignorant. I just said do not listen to poison. It will get to you. Do not harbor a sin and allow it to sit there. Do not say, well, this is how I'm built. This is just the way it is. Do not accept that. Look to God's word and what it says and obey his commandment and your heart will be pure. And as Matthew 5, verse 8 says, blessed are the pure in heart. Those are the ones who will see God. The poison in heart is not. The pure in heart are the ones that will see God.